All right, how do I sound? Am I doing good? Levels and reverbs and...
Yes, I'm the only person you have to look at tonight, so I think you'll be able to talk into the microphone better. We are guestless. We're supposed to have a guest tonight, but his children might have COVID, so he's staying far, far away.
Yes, it was good of him to inform us in advance.
Okay, so before... We had originally talked about doing our next episode, just the two of us again, but then we had a potential guest, so we were going to push this back, but now it's back to just the two of us.
Yeah, which I think is good. We did you and me, the first two, and then we had a series of guests, and I think it's probably good to do this occasionally, just you and me, to sort of, I don't know, how would you describe it? Just
Either just talk about different topics or clarify things that come up in previous episodes or whatever we want.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to doing this because after our first couple of episodes, I was getting a better idea of where you're coming from when it comes to faith. But I didn't really understand all that well exactly what you are. And then after all of our guest episodes, I'm still kind of confused. So I'm looking forward to the opportunity to attempt to understand you better. And I know that you have some criticisms of me, especially when it comes to, I don't know, like when I was having it out with Justin and Stout, and I guess a little bit with Rob, you were a little bit quiet during some of the tenser moments. And I'm curious to know kind of what you think of those exchanges and where you disagree and so on.
So how do you want to do it? Do you want to just like ask me questions or how do we want to get into this?
Let's start like this maybe. Okay, so I went over the contents of my manifesto in episode 2. And I talked about how I'm not impressed with philosophical arguments for the existence of God. I'm not impressed by claims of profound personal religious experiences that Christians or any other religious person claims to have. And I think that the notion of faith as it's used by Christians of the sort that we came up with, I think that that idea is pretty silly. And I therefore see no reason to hang on to the Christian worldview as a whole. And you seem to sympathize on each point, but you, I feel like it was in particular when it comes to the personal experience thing is where you found, it's like where I feel like I met the most resistance. And you want to say there are like legitimate ways to claim to know things beyond the intellect. There are other sorts of knowing or something I think was more or less what you said verbatim. And so I would like to talk about that, I guess, first, because it seems like that's where the most tension was. I think it was in episode 2. We kind of went around and around that, and you edited out a significant amount of that. So maybe we could try again to hash that out a little bit. What you left in the end of episode 2 was just like a little piece. My criticism of Christians saying that I believe because I had a profound spiritual experience. And you can't take that away from me. It felt very significant to me in the moment. So, and then my criticism obviously is that, well, Christians aren't the only ones who have experiences like that. It's like, Muslims have them and Hindus and Buddhists and secular people have them, but Christians have these same experiences that fall under the same category of like profound spiritual experience and then lay claim to any conceivable interpretation of spiritual experience. They all fall under the umbrella of Christianity specifically, and everybody else is confused. And I would say you're kidding yourself because everybody else can say the same thing about you. You don't have a monopoly on spiritual experience. So that seems to me to indicate that there is some like feature of being a human that we are capable of having certain kinds of spiritual experiences, quote unquote, but to lay claim to the meaning behind them and to is, I don't think like a Christian, for example, can justifiably just say that mine are the only ones that are really legitimate. So I tend to see them as an explainable human phenomenon, some feature of our software that is not spiritual in origin. And so I think that there's some tension between you and I on that point.
I don't know about that. I mean, I think there's definitely, there's something there. Everybody seems to have these experiences. So whether there's a naturalistic explanation for it, that it's part of, you know, there's something in the genetic makeup of humans that we have a bent towards these kinds of experiences, or whether it's implanted from an external supernatural source, I think I'm agnostic about the origins of it. But clearly there is this human propensity to look upward and outward and look towards the divine. I think I agree with your assessment that, well, clearly Muslims and Hindus and Buddhists and Christians and even atheists have these kinds of experiences. So clearly it's not, well, the Christians are the ones who have real experiences and everyone else is confused or demon-possessed. That's silly. I agree with that. I'm agnostic towards the origins of that, one way or another. I don't think it clearly points to one explanation or another. It's just a thing that is.
Hmm. Okay. But you're not, okay, well, that you just used the word agnostic. Okay, so that reminds me of you describe yourself as a Christian asterisk agnostic or agnostic asterisk Christian. Can you describe that, and maybe we can see if something comes from there?
Sure. I'm at a place where I am agnostic towards the existence of God, for the most part. I mean, I think I'd said in maybe the first episode that I lean slightly more towards, yeah, maybe there's something there, but I don't have any hard whatever. It's
yeah, the 50. You lean 51% towards belief in
right
deity.
Something like that. Yeah, but so whatever that 1% is. Christianity is the cultural context that I was raised in. I have zero understanding or context for Islam or Hinduism or anything else. I don't lose one second of sleep wondering if actually, oh, maybe Islam is the truth. Maybe I've got it all wrong. I don't give it a second thought ever, because Christianity is the only context I have to point this 1% of some feeling I have, like, yeah, I think there's something more going on here. And so that's the context that I understand that in.
Understand maybe, what? The spiritual qualities of being a human?
Well, just feeling like I think whatever is in me that feels like there's more than just atoms and you're born and you live and you die and then it's infinite blackness forever. If there is something more going on, I guess I should also say maybe there could be something more going on, and you die, and there's infinite blackness forever. I'm not tied to the idea that I think there's something more, therefore Jesus died on the cross for my sins. It could be that, I'm trying to think if I already, as I don't want to keep repeating myself from what I've said in past episodes, but.
Well, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, because what I, like if I could have an agreeable outcome to the end of this conversation right now
right.
would be if I could, or that, okay, if I could describe you in a sentence, almost kind of like encapsulate you, like assign a definition to you that you would approve of.
Right.
That would be a happy ending for me.
Okay.
So if we end up beating the dead horse a little bit, I don't personally mind. I don't know if the listeners, if it would bother them.
But I would love to give you a happy ending. Okay, so here's an example of something that could be. Maybe there is no God, but there is another dimension to reality. And people have ghost, supernatural experiences, ghost stories and things like that. Well, maybe it's not that there's like this spiritual realm and deities and things. Maybe there's just another dimension. And when you die and your physical body ceases to exist, somehow there's a part of us that's connected to this other dimension. And so when people have a ghost experience, it's like that other dimension bumping up against the dimensions that we're able to normally interact with and understand. But when we shed our physical body, we go fully into that dimension. But it's a totally naturalistic explanation or something. That could be a thing. I don't know. So when I say that I feel like there's something more going on, I don't tie it necessarily directly to any theological tenets or specific doctrines. Or I do feel like I have a, like what Stout said, the Christian story is a really good story. Now, maybe that's part of the Jungian, the hero's journey and the gospel writers and the writers of the Bible, Old and New Testament, were tapped into this hero's journey and sort of this story that flows across the centuries and all this culminating in Jesus and all this. But it's a really good story. And it's the only story that I know, really. I don't know any other stories to the extent that it's like that I can give equal weight to other ones. I'm sure that if I was born in the Middle East, I would think that Islam is a really good story. Mm-hmm. And any other culture, if I was born in Sweden, maybe there wouldn't be any other stories because I would have a humanistic perspective or something. So I fully recognize that my attachment to Christianity is based purely on the happenstance of my birth, time and location and context and family and all that stuff. But it is what it is. So that's sort of the pull towards a supernatural explanation. That's the conduit that I have for it. It's the only thing I know.
Okay, so what then, Christianity, that story in particular, or that, I guess just the story, the content of the book, what function does it serve? What utility do you derive from it? What are you getting out of it that you allow it to remain a component of your perspective? What is it that you're getting out of it?
I think I'm trying to figure that out. This is sort of what I talked about in my first couple object lesson videos, trying to separate whatever attachment I still have to it, what part of it is true and worth keeping, and what part of it is the cultural bullshit that's been injected by American evangelicalism that is not actually part of it. It's not worth keeping. So I feel like the last several years, I'm certainly not a practicing Christian. I don't go to church. It's not like I have a daily Bible study that I do. I feel like I am more observing from the outside.
It was part of your, it's like part of your makeup. It was, I mean, you grew up in that context and it informed your perspective on life to a significant degree. So
sure.
But you've rejected parts of it. So could you, yes, like enumerate for me then what the parts of it that you have discarded and what is left for you after the fact?
I would say I've discarded literalism, inerrancy. I've discarded belief in hell to the extent that I'm able to discard it. Mm-hmm. I've said it, you know, I think there will always be like an asterisk on, I don't believe in hell, but maybe. But for the most part, I'm not that worried about that anymore. Mm-hmm. I've discarded the attachment, the cultural marriage between American evangelicalism and Christianity. Mm-hmm. And if you're a real Christian, then you vote for Republicans. And if you're a real Christian, then you picket abortion clinics and that kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. Shedding those cultural elements of it.
What about, in particular, the identity of Yahweh as the dude, the deity of Christ, the historicity of what he's said to have done 2,000 years ago, the death and rebirth and the significance of that? What do you think of those types of things?
I guess the best I could say is that I'm agnostic towards that. I'm not totally closed off to the idea that Jesus had some sort of a extra, what would be a word that's like, well, okay, so in, I think it's in Meeting Jesus Again for the First Time, Marcus Borg describes Jesus as a spirit person. Mm-hmm. Like he was tapped into this higher. Actually, I think I have the quote written down here. Let me see. Okay, here. So this is from somebody reviewed the book. He says, By spirit person, Borg means that Jesus was a mediator of the sacred, for whom the Spirit of God was a reality that was experienced. So I think that it's possible, that there are people who are tapped into this higher level of spiritual experience, just like there are people who are tapped into higher levels of the intellect, and there are people who are able to reach maybe moral levels or empathetic levels with human that most people can't reach. There's all sorts of people who are really good at different parts of life. So I think it makes sense that there would also be human beings who are tapped into the spiritual more than other people. And Jesus seems to be one of these people. Whatever his divine status is, even if he was just purely a dude, he seemed to have something more going on.
So kind of like what I was talking about with Stout, when it comes to the manner in which the gospel narratives came to be, the amount of time that passed between Jesus' life and the time when things were starting to be written down, the way that the story was crafted by compromised, what I would argue were compromised individuals with an agenda, when they were writing about the life and deeds of Jesus, they had an agenda going into that writing process. That seems to be the case based on the information that I have interacted with. Books I've read and lectures I've listened to and podcasts I've listened to, and that seems to be a fair assessment, I think. If you're interacting honestly with the available data, there seems to be some legitimacy to that particular criticism of the manner in which, in particular, the New Testament came about. Do you put any stock in people who are saying, who are offering those criticisms, and do those criticisms or observations or whatever you want to call them, do they affect your view on Jesus at all? Like, for me, when I interact with those things, the man Jesus kind of gets knocked down several pegs. It's like, I don't take you as seriously because I understand that your story was, the fish got bigger over time. Like, these people wanted to interpret your life in accordance with things that were written in the Old Testament. So I don't know. It's almost like it's like a semi-fictional account of Jesus's life, right? Like, sure. It's like, yes, if you just read the Bible, if you just read the New Testament and take it with the assumption that this actually was a fairly accurate account of Jesus and his deeds, then, like, man, this guy was incredible, absolutely incredible. But it's like, well, hold on a second. It's like the people who wrote this story were turning Jesus into something. It seems to be the case that they were turning him into something that he wasn't. They were very liberal in their interpretation of his life, and they were injecting all kinds of shit into the story in order to make it fit a certain template.
So what?
So the story itself, in like a Jordan Peterson biblical lecture series type sense, is very interesting and compelling, and there's lots of deep truth in it, but it has nothing to do with the, it's not conveying historical events and historical truths. It's like there are deeper truths embedded in the structural narrative of the story.
Sure.
Which is, okay, so maybe I need to explain that a little bit. Like, okay, so I like to say that it's like you can watch Moana and get the exact same truths that I'm talking about like getting out of your comfort zone and facing your fears, whatever, becoming the best version of yourself and whatever. It's like these deep truths that are embedded in like all of our best stories, they conform to this very similar underlying narrative structure, with the hero's journey. And so the way that the story of Jesus, the story of Christianity evolved over time, it like over the decades, it took on the form of the monomyth to one degree or another. Like Jesus is he's the archetypal hero. It's the same story we keep telling ourselves over and over and over, even before we were able to write things down. It's like there are truths that we continue to communicate to one another in the form of narrative. And the details of the narrative are secondary. It's the underlying structure where the real good stuff is embedded. And so you can watch The Matrix, and you can watch Moana, and you can watch Neverending Story, and you can read the New Testament, and you get the same shit.
So what's your point?
My point is, why do you put Jesus on a pedestal?
I don't know that I am.
You're claiming that he was literally a dude who was especially in tune with the spirit world. And I'm saying you're taking the contents of the New Testament too seriously.
No. I mean, what? Even if he never existed.
So the character Jesus,
sure,
as portrayed, was a spirit man.
Sure. Well, yeah,
That's very different than, I think, if that's what you were trying to communicate, I don't think that came through. You're saying the character Jesus, not the literal historical figure Jesus, the character was...
Well, we don't know what percentage of what we're reading there is the character and is the literal historical person. Presumably there's some overlap. There's also some artistic license taken by,
yes,
the New Testament writers. But I think at best you can say we're agnostic about... You know, it's probably not 99% historical and only 1% artistic license. There's probably a lot more the fish getting bigger going on there. But again, even if he didn't exist, it's still a really good story.
Yes.
You can read Harry Potter. Dumbledore says a lot of really profound things that are worth thinking about. Doesn't matter that he's not a real person.
Yeah.
So I guess from that sense, I'm saying... Yeah, that Jesus was this spirit person, but I'm agnostic as to, you know, did he literally walk on water and was he crucified and actually came back from the dead? I don't know about that, but even if you take, yeah, it's the same story over, you know, Jesus and Moana and Neverending Story and the Iliad and the Odyssey and all this stuff. So then what's the harm in saying, oh, this... Christianity and the story of Jesus is sort of the dominant. There's not a lot of cultural context around Moana,
yeah,
and examining the deep truths of Moana. But this dude's story has been examined ad nauseum for a couple thousand years by billions of people.
Yes.
That's sort of the dominant story that Western humanity has decided, we're going to focus on that one.
And they added all this literal shit that you're discarding, but you recognize that there is gold in there.
Of course,
what you're drawn to. And you recognize that it can be found elsewhere, but this was the version of the hero's journey that you were brought up with, like constantly being told.
Sure.
And
yeah, basically anybody who was born in the West in the last 500 years or more, that's true of all those humans. That's the dominant story that we're all raised with. And so maybe I have more of somehow a connection to that. Now, don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying, oh, yeah, he was definitely a fake dude and it's all just a myth and Jesus and Dumbledore. Like, I think that he was at least a historical figure.
Yes.
Seems like there's enough evidence for that.
He's
not just a made-up dude.
Mm-hmm.
When I say I'm agnostic towards his divinity and whether he walked on water, et cetera, maybe that's true. I'm not saying, well, clearly it did not happen, but I'm also don't attach any special, I'm not going to bet everything I have that it is or is not true. It's just sort of like, I kind of like your tennis thing. I'm not sure I have enough data one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
So, but either way, it doesn't really matter to me. Because again, I'm not worried about if I don't accept it in just the right way and say just the right words and just the right prayer that I'm going to burn forever. So it really doesn't, I don't have like this strong push, this urgency of I better figure it out as soon as possible. Because if I figure it out, I was going to figure out tomorrow, but today I get hit by a bus. Oop, you're screwed because you were so close, but you just missed it. I'm not concerned about that anymore. So I don't have this strong drive to figure it out right now. I can kind of just live in the ambiguity of it and sort of continue my journey towards it. Maybe in a year or 5 years or 10 years, I'll be totally closer to, you know, just a full-on atheist. Yeah, there's no historical truth to it at all. Or maybe I'll be a pastor. And I don't know, but I'm not worried about it. I'll get there when I get there.
So disregarding the cultural...
I do want to say one more thing.
Sure.
I forget the exact quote, but C.S. Lewis has that quote about, I'm going to butcher it, but basically he's saying it's stupid to say that Jesus was a great moral teacher. Basically, either he was a crazy person or he was the son of God, and there's no in between. I think that's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
I think there's plenty of wisdom to be gathered there. I think you could be a Jesus follower and not believe in his divinity, and there's plenty of gold to mine out of that.
Yeah, he's either a madman or was it mad?
Yeah, you can spit at him and kill him as a demon, or you can fall at his feet and worship him.
Yeah, okay.
But let's not have any of this nonsense about him being a great moral teacher. I think that's stupid. Yes, he clearly is a great moral teacher, his divinity is irrelevant to that.
And the whole thing about him being crazy, you're assuming that the things that he said, he actually historically said.
Of course,
No, this is a narrative that evolved over time to fit a ongoing universal narrative, i.e. the hero's journey. And so we don't really know what the guy said.
Yeah, we have nothing that Jesus actually wrote.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's a silly quote. So, okay, what was I going to say? Disregarding the cultural bullshit that you tend to focus on, namely like the marriage of evangelicals and the political right and the emergence of like Donald Trump and then him being this like disgusting figure who, because of political reasons, Christians, evangelicals in particular, are just like throwing away all their values and just because he's their guy politically. Mm-hmm. And that infuriates you to a degree that it doesn't me or other people or whatever. So disregarding all of that, and what we're left with is the truth claims and what do we do with them, and the book and what do we do with it? How do we incorporate it into our lives? The content, that is. You sound like, when you talk about these things, the word agnostic seems like it fits you perfectly. I feel like you are an agnostic. And the asterisk Christian thing, I've called myself an agnostic, which, by the way, I'm starting to think I need to start calling myself an atheist. Maybe we can talk about that some other time, but I kind of feel like I'm starting to lean toward, that probably fits me better.
Functionally. I mean, in terms of the literal definitions, I think Dawkins has like a seven-point scale, and Dawkins would say he's a 6-point atheist.
It's very vague, but like you're an atheist, it doesn't mean I am going to make a strong statement there is no God. Being an atheist means I do not have a God belief, basically.
Right.
Just like it's neutral, which sounds a lot like agnosticism. And I think that the two terms kind of have some definitional overlap.
Mm-hmm.
And if you choose the term agnostic, it kind of has a softer, rounder-edged sort of feel to it. And an atheist has a little bit of a sharper edge to it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're very similar, it seems like. And I feel, I think, a little bit more drawn to the word atheist than I do the word agnostic, I think. But anyways.
Well, because you're an asshole.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you're probably right. So let's say I'm an atheist. Asterisk, citizen of Montenui. It's like, I also feel drawn to the hero's journey.
Right.
But that doesn't mean I have
to. That's a Moana reference, I think. Right?
Yes, the island that Moana comes from is Montenui. TJ is a Christian, is a agnostic asterisk Christian because he's drawn to the hero's journey as it is manifested in the story of Jesus. And I feel particularly drawn to the story of Moana. I don't think that you need that asterisk Christian thing. I appreciate that you, and I know this is an arbitrary point. So, yeah, I feel like maybe here's a preliminary attempt at putting you into a box. TJ is an agnostic, a former fundamentalist evangelical Christian who recognized a bunch of the cultural horseshit and recognized the manner in which the truth claims that undergird fundamentalist Christianity fail intellectually, rationally, logically. They fail. And so TJ has discarded a lot of the fundamentalist, literalist truth claims, and has also recognized sort of the hypocrisy of evangelicalism generally. But TJ simultaneously recognizes there is something valuable, deeply valuable, to be mined from Scripture. In particular, the narrative surrounding Jesus Christ in the New Testament.
Yes, I would add the Old Testament, especially after listening to Jordan Peterson's biblical lecture series.
So Scripture generally.
Yeah.
You recognize that it's like an infinite mine of wisdom, which is probably why it stood the test of time. But it has nothing to do with like the historical claims made. There's a deep, deep well of wisdom, of accumulated practical wisdom at the foundation. And the narrative is a vehicle for conveying the underlying wisdom. But the narrative itself isn't as important. It's like a transmission vector. It's a means of transmitting the underlying wisdom. So you recognize that and you're drawn to it. And you also recognize that you can find similar wisdom in other places, but you're particularly drawn to Scripture, the Bible, as a function of your upbringing.
Right. It's the only thing I know.
You're familiar with it.
Yeah.
And so it's like you can go to that well to get your water, or you could go over to some other well, whether it be a different religion or a particularly good fiction. Water can be found elsewhere, but this one, you're familiar with it.
Sure. And I have a sense it's different wells, but they're all connected to like the similar stream.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, well, this is the only true well, and the other wells are all have poison water. No, I think there's commonality.
Yeah, and maybe some are particularly bountiful.
Right.
Maybe some not quite as much, but yes,
undergirding or underpinning or
yes, there's a large like
the foundation
super or deep body of water from which all of these different wells.
Yeah. The water table,
something like that. Yeah. So there's like this source, a deep source, and it bubbles up through these various wells, and your camp happens to be right next to this particular well.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like, well, I've got this one here, or there. Hey, there's another one 1,000 miles away you could walk to. Well, this one seems to be good enough, so I think I'll just chill here.
Yeah. So you're not making like strong claims, explicitly disregarding the truth claims. Like the kind of truth claims that don't take as seriously as we used to, at least. You're agnostic towards those. And that's not really what's important. Ultimately, that's not what's really important.
Would it be helpful to go through some of the things that would lean me more towards agnosticism, or some of the truth claims that I'm not convinced by, or some of that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's start with the teleological argument. The fact that there's something here, there's something rather than nothing. Therefore, there's probably a someone who made the something.
And the stuff that's here happens to be quite complex and orderly.
Right. So I am unconvinced by that. Well, I guess I should say, I think it makes sense and it's a good argument, but I feel like it also is susceptible to the infinite regress. If this world is so complex that it demands a designer to have made it, then by definition, the thing that made it is more complex than our complexity. And so if our complexity demands a designer, then the bigger thing
even more so demands a bigger designer. And so that just goes on ad infinitum.
And of course, Christians get around that in the manner in which they define Yahweh, in which he, like, he existed before time and space. Well, there was nothing before him.
Well, how convenient.
Yeah. So the definition of the Christian God gets around. But you recognize that that's a convenient way of getting around that problem.
Because Richard Dawkins could say the same thing about the singularity before the Big Bang. It was just a thing that's always existed. It was outside of the time and space because, when the Big Bang happened, people have this misconception that it's sort of like there's this big black void with a little tiny dot sitting in the middle of it. There was no thing. There was nothing around the dot, as our dad likes to describe it. as the Big Bang expanded the universe, time and space were created as it expanded. There was nothing outside of it.
Including time and space.
Right, exactly. Which makes no rational sense, but no less rational sense than, oh, well, Yahweh was just always there. He just gets to step out of the infinite regress.
Oh, this reminds me. I didn't do it in a housekeeping. I forget when I did it. I think it was last episode with Stout where I said that it was Hitchens' razor was whatever. What I said in episode 5 was a quote from Carl Sagan, not Christopher Hitchens. Hitchens' razor, which is applicable here, is that which can be asserted without evidence can be disregarded without evidence.
Right. So pertaining to this specific argument, I really like what Stout said in the last episode that origins are really weird, no matter how you splice it. Mm-hmm. If there is a God, then that's really weird. Where did he come from? He's always existed for trillions and trillions of infinity years. Well, that's how can you wrap your mind around that? That's really weird. Or there's no God, and there was a tiny singularity that existed, for infinity, or maybe there's the multiverse, or maybe like...
Maybe it expands and then contracts back down and expands again.
And then expands again. Yeah, but it's existed for eternity. Well, that's really weird too.
Yeah.
So no matter which avenue you go, there's really weird shit going on that no one can explain.
Yes.
So either way, I feel like both sides want to say, well, your argument is ridiculous because of all the stupid things you say about it. Well, both sides have ridiculousness in them. Like so many other things, it kind of just comes down to what you're bent towards or what you lean towards, or different people see this evidence and they lean this way or they lean the other way. But I think
this is where my tennis analogy, I think, is nice. You just put a big question mark over the whole thing and move on with your fucking life, because there's no way of knowing one way or the other.
Right. And I'd say that's where I'm at on origins. I think for personal experience, I tend to think that there's something more going on than just what we can sense with our five senses, what we can measure scientifically.
Now, that's a very vague way of describing it. Would you be willing to say anything more explicit than that? It's just there seem to be odd things happening that we don't have an explanation for. And then, like, is that all we can say about that?
Yeah, I think probably. People have experiences, and then they like to say, well, therefore, my religious context affirms what that is. But I think it's probably sort of what you described before about it's the reverse. People have these experiences. They have this context that they know how to put it, and so they fit the square peg in the round hole, and they shove it in there to make sense of it. But yes, there does seem to be, even if you could discard 99.99999% of all of these experiences that people have had over the course of human history because of cognitive dissonance and bias towards seeking patterns and things and all of this kind of stuff, that still leaves a shitload of things that have happened that just, no matter how you slice it, there is no good explanation. And there's no way to explain it naturalistically.
It's just something we don't understand.
Right, exactly.
But we observe it, and it's mysterious.
Right. But thousands of years ago, humans observed thunder and lightning, and they didn't have a good explanation for that, and so they ascribed it to deities or, whatever. People thought that evil spirits caused diseases because they didn't have an understanding of germs. And
so the more our understanding grows, the the less mysterious the universe seems to be.
Well, that seems to be the pattern of human history. The more that we grow in knowledge and experience and understanding, the supernatural component shrinks and shrinks.
So assuming we don't get wiped out by a pandemic or nuke ourselves to death, eventually maybe we will be able to provide a sufficient naturalistic explanation for a lot of this, if not all of it. You know, who knows?
Sure, yeah, maybe. Or maybe we get to a point where we figure out a way to
commune with the spirits.
Right, exactly. Yeah, maybe.
Right. So, but the manner in which, say, for example, in a fundamentalist Christian will take a little experience that they have and then ascribe it to their specific worldview, something about that is off.
I think it's confirmation bias.
Yeah, so, okay, this will be, you cut it out of episode two, but remember, so I told that story about someone who we both know who told me a story once when I was asking him about why he has confidence in his belief or whatever. I was agnostic at that point already. I disregarded it, and I was having a discussion about this in particular. And he said he has one story in particular that he kind of clings to, and that whenever he has doubts, he remembers this story and it gives him confidence and it bolsters his faith or whatever. And it was when he was on a mission trip, and because of the long flight and because of the dietary change and everything, he was really, really constipated. And so they went somewhere as a part of the mission trip, and he walked through into some sort of courtyard, and in the center of the courtyard was an apple tree. And he was able to eat some apples, and it relieved his constipation. He was able to poop, and he feels that was God intervening in his life and whatever. So that makes him feel confident that Yahweh's the dude. It's okay, come on, dude. It's that's the definition of what confirmation bias. Yeah. So yeah, that's to varying degrees, that is the way that a fundamentalist religious person like a Christian will take an event that was really ultimately was just arbitrary, but they are motivated to interpret it a particular way because it supports the things that they already think, and that explains, I think, pretty most of these stories, you know, quote unquote, that support the things that Christians believe or whatever.
Sure. And I don't fault people for feeling like those things help bolster their faith, or it gives them a good feeling, or helps them to believe a certain thing. Whatever. Do whatever you got to do, man. But the problem for me, and this is especially true of American evangelical Christians, well, I guess I should say I think that's true of all extremists in any religion, but I'm most familiar because I have to deal with this every day, is that people have an experience like that. I ate an apple in a foreign country and I took a dump, and therefore we should elect strict constructionist conservative judges because Jesus wants me to.
Yeah,
it's,
well, there's
it's
a, there's
making
a,
that
there's
leap.
There's a few logical steps in between there, but you're saying that
it ultimately leads to that. Yes. And so the fact that it's like, well, okay, that, hang on, that's a problem. Who said the quote that you, was it Adam Smith about personal experience or revelation is for the first person?
Thomas Paine.
Thomas Paine, that's right.
Revelation is revelation to the first guy only, basically. And after that, it's hearsay.
Right.
And I am not obliged to take it seriously.
Right. So a couple episodes ago, I told my psilocybin story, and I had heard the thing, look inside yourself, and I went to the meeting and the verse about the kingdom of heaven's within you. I feel like that was somehow significant for me.
It was oddly coincidental.
Right. But I expect no one to take anything from that, because I don't think that's intended for any, whatever intention, some supernatural force or a deity, or even just if it's purely naturalistic, purely coincidental, it still means something to me. It's only for me. It's not therefore other people should live their lives in a certain way because this thing happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
So if more people framed those experiences in that way, I think we'd all be better off.
Yeah.
So when we had Justin on, he kept going back to this five fingers on your right hand analogy that you can't prove that you have five fingers on your right hand. Therefore, you can't really know anything. Therefore, there's no place for you to stand on to say that Jesus isn't real because you can't prove that you have five fingers on your right hand. That's a vast oversimplification.
Yes, I was going to say he would not like the way that you just laid out that argument, but that is a rough approximation, a very unfair and rough patronizing.
Okay, do a better job.
Okay, I'll try. Okay, so we're talking about we all operate on assumptions ultimately. So I want to make a strong claim like I have five fingers on my right hand, but it's possible that I'm confused about that. Like I could literally be in a loony bin in a straitjacket and maybe I don't have any hands or maybe I'm in the Matrix and whatever. So I'm actually confused even though I'm sitting here right now looking at and flexing and feeling my right hand and one, two, three, there's five fingers. I am at some basic level operating on an assumption. I don't really know. And so when I criticize believers for the fact that their beliefs are also ultimately founded upon assumptions, I don't really have the right to criticize them, because I'm doing the same thing. So that's probably an incomplete, whatever, imperfect representation of the argument that Justin was trying to make.
That's pretty close, though.
I did my best, Justin. But, and I disregarded it because I feel like it's equating two things that are very different.
Right, yes. But, yeah, I think that argument is making a category error. And since we recorded that episode, I've been trying to think about the best language to describe this. But I think that the way I've tried to think about these things is the difference between things that are objective and subjective and the categories of philosophical / spiritual and then practical. So from a philosophical standpoint, it is subjective that I have five fingers on my right hand. Yeah, maybe I'm in the Matrix, maybe I'm dreaming, maybe I'm high. So yeah, philosophically, you can run circles around it and show that that is a subjective statement. But practically, that's about the most objective statement you could possibly make.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's confusing those two categories. It's taking things that, yeah, I mean, philosophically, everything is subjective. I don't know if you can make an objective philosophical statement. It's almost like those two things are mutually incompatible. But there are lots of things in this world that are practically objective, even if, you know, there's a subjective sense in which ultimately you can't pin it down to a certain argument or something. But in the real world, when humans have to operate and live in the world together, yes, there's five fingers on my hand. I'm looking at it. You can see it. Practically, that's true.
Mm-hmm. And you can't apply that same kind of thinking or the same kind of standard to spiritual beliefs.
Correct. Yes. Yeah, maybe your personal experiences are true for you or give you some sort of insight, but that has no weight and should give no weight to anybody else's experience. Yeah, yeah, I guess I didn't mean it necessarily specifically towards the personal experience argument, but it seems like maybe it fits that one the best. But yeah, I'm unconvinced by, well, everything's subjective, so therefore nothing's subjective, or you can claim anything you want that is subjective and you can call it truth because nobody can say anything isn't subjective,
yeah,
or something
I think
that.
You liked my description.
Yeah, I think it's fair.
I'm glad that well analogy came up. I feel like that's useful. So you're an agnostic asterisk Christian, but in reality, you don't necessarily need that tacked on to like this, the word you use to describe yourself. Functionally, you're an agnostic.
Yeah, I think
if one of the people we grew up with, like if you could list out all of your stats, like they would look at you and they would say, oh, he's agnostic. The asterisk Christian thing is a personal way that you think, but
yes,
functionally you're an agnostic.
I guess functionally, but I think what I'm trying to do is figure out, so if we're going to stick with this well analogy, I feel like the deeper water table, that there's good water down there, but I think that the people in my camp, the American evangelical Christians, have poisoned the well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've like left that camp because I think that there's, that well is no good to drink out of. But the underlying water, there's good water down there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I'm trying to figure out. Well, how do I get down in there? And how do I get down there without being poisoned by what they've shit into the well over the last 30 years?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm trying to figure out. That's, you know, I'm trying to drill a new well to see what's actually down there. I think I agree with everything you said. I guess I would just want to make sure that I'm totally upfront. That's, I agree with what you're saying, but also I guess that's where the asterisk, the 51%, you know, whatever, the 1% that I lean this way is leaning towards, yeah, maybe there is something different about this story, or there's something, maybe it's part of the broader narrative, but this guy really stands out, or there was something more going on beyond just a purely naturalistic explanation.
Yeah, now, it could be that, I mean, obviously that book, it was crafted over such a long period of time with so much intent behind it. It was like perfected over time, right? So much love and care went into the crafting of that particular version of the hero's journey, right? So maybe there's the manner in which, I don't know, maybe it's a particularly wide well or whatever. Like, it was a very well-constructed well over a long period of time, right? So maybe that accounts for something of why it has withstood the test of time, why people feel particularly drawn to it, why you feel particularly drawn to it, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe Jesus was actually divine in some way. I don't see it totally black and white. Maybe there's some plane of existence where Jesus, maybe he doesn't have to be the literal son of Yahweh, which is himself. It's like that meme that's Jesus praying in the garden, and he says, hello, Dad, are you there? It's me, you. So maybe it doesn't have to be exactly that, but maybe he could also be somehow more than just a man or something. Maybe. I don't know. I'm not going to stake my life on it at this point.
Okay, this,
I guess what I'm saying is I'm open to that possibility. I get the sense you're not open to that at this point, whereas I am open to that possibility.
I see absolutely no reason to open my mind to that particular possibility, but maybe in like a celestial teapot sense, maybe I'm open.
Right. Yeah. Maybe this is where that practical philosophical, like I'm saying from a practical standpoint, I'm open to that being literally true in some sense. I'm not saying the modern American evangelical sense of biblical literalism where every word is, I'm not saying true in that sense, but there's something more going on there. I'm open to that in a practical sense. Maybe you're open to it in that philosophical sense. Well, yeah, anything's possible, but it's
extraordinarily unlikely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't know. I feel like we're like the perfect, like if you want to know the difference between an agnostic and an atheist, I feel like this is the perfect podcast because I feel like we're in a similar place, but it's like I'm more comfortable and willing to be a little bit sharper about it.
I'm comfortable and willing being squishier about it.
Yeah. So, which I think is a good way to differentiate between an agnostic and an atheist. So here you go. Cool. Okay. So the one thing left, I guess, for me to direct at you would be, so in particular, during my back and forth with Justin Grimm and my back and forth, I haven't re-listened to the Stout one since right after it came out, but I think I recall near the end where me and Stout kind of had a very gentle sort of debate, like conversation for like 30 minutes or whatever, like during debate type exchanges between like me and a guest, mostly it's me being argumentative and confrontational or whatever, and it's you more listening. So do you have, I don't know, any retroactive thoughts on any of the things that were said, any of the when it comes to the contents of periods of debate, you know, that we've had in the past on the podcast?
Not about that one specifically.
The stout one, you mean?
Yeah, I think when he talked about there's sort of this metaphysical assumption that you have to come to, you have to decide, is this a universe where there could be some supernatural element? Is it a world where somebody could die and come back from the dead?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it not? And I don't know if this gets back to the atheistic agnostic sharp versus squishy. I'm more open to the squishiness of, yeah, maybe something like that could happen. I'm not closed off to that. But I'm also not 100% convinced that it is. I could be swayed either way. So that probably... No, it's just another representation.
That sounds like agnosticism. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I thought of something else that concerning the something I'm unconvinced of, or maybe it's not that I'm unconvinced of it. A lot of believers, and I think this is true of any believers of many religions, but again, Christianity is the context that I understand it. They have this idea that, or they talk like, if there is no God, then there's no reason for existing.
No reason for existing. By that you mean like there's no meaning to be experienced in life, basically.
Yeah, basically. But I feel like that argument sits on this razor's edge of, if there is no God, then a lot of people think, well, then life is meaningless and it's nihilism and it's every man for himself and rape and pillage. But then it can also go the other way. If there's no God, then it actually makes this life even more meaningful because this is the only one that you get. And mm-hmm. so make the most of it and leave a lasting impact and do your best with it and enjoy the beauty, the majesty of existence while you've got it. And I think because I don't subscribe to the idea anymore that if there's no God, then everything is meaningless. That actually, if there's no God, I think maybe it's more meaningful. Because if there is a God and Jesus died on the cross for my sins, so I'm going to go to heaven and I'm going to worship him on a cloud with a harp for all of eternity, then this life is meaningless because this is an insignificant blip in the infinity of eternity. So do whatever you can to get your fire insurance card so that you can go through the pearly gates, but this life is meaningless. And I know that there would be all the Christians are pulling their hair out because they have all these arguments against that, but I feel like fundamentally when it breaks down, that's the other side of that argument. But because I'm not attached to that anymore, I'm okay with the possibility that there's no God because I think that there can still be plenty of meaning and even maybe more meaning
mm-hmm.
if this is all that there is.
It reminds me of that quote from Troy when Brad Pitt / Achilles, it's like he comes back from a day of fighting and he's got his little like slave girl in his tent who was like one of the little priestesses, Perseus.
Isn't she the king's daughter or something?
Yes. Yep. And like after he takes off his robe and she gets to see his wang, and then he puts his clothes back on and she, I forget how it comes up, but yeah, he's like, I'm going to tell you something they don't tell you in your temple. The gods envy us. They envy us because we're mortal, because we could die at any moment. Every moment is more beautiful as a result of it. And then she eats her grape, and she's like, I thought you were a dumb brute. It's like, I could have hated a dumb brute, or I could have forgiven a dumb brute. Yeah, I think I agree with the spirit of that.
And I think when it comes down to it, most Christians don't believe that either. Because if we could somehow prove, this is just a thought experiment, because obviously it's not possible, but let's say we could somehow prove that there is no God. Well, then the next day, it's not like the world wakes up and all the Christians start raping and murdering and stealing and living life for themselves, life would go on. Some people would have nervous breakdowns, but for the most part, people would find new meaning and new things, and life would carry on. And so
it's very clear that the fact that a lot of Christians think that way, it represents very shallow thinking. You're not thinking very hard about this. It's like, obviously you can experience meaning in life if there's no God. I mean, just people are doing it right now. Like, just look around. And it's like, there are evolutionary and societal forces at work that prevent like people from just going crazy willy-nilly, raping and murder and pillaging. It's like, it's not because of Jesus, you know. So yeah, it's silly and it's shallow thinking.
Oh, okay. So that brings me to the morality arguments that I'm unconvinced by. So Christians will say, if there's no God, then there's no objective morality. And I guess therefore, rape and pillage to your heart's content. I think what Christians don't recognize or understand or admit is that the history of humanity, let's say the history of the Christian faith, let's just take that, is essentially the search for people trying to figure out ultimate truth, trying to figure out the right thing to do. So over the last 2,000 years, belief in God was used to justify the Crusades and was used to justify slavery in the American South and was used to justify all sorts of crazy things. Basically, the history of Christianity is sort of like it's people trying to figure out the right thing to do, growing over time, coming to a place of deeper understanding. Yes, we know now that the Crusades were probably a bad idea. And now in 2020, we understand that, of course, using the Bible to justify slavery in the American South was a terrible thing to do and very unbiblical. So it's been the history of these people of faith growing in understanding, coming to a place of understanding God better and deeper understanding of Scripture. Okay, but that's exactly what everybody else is doing. All of human history is people growing in understanding and trying different things in different societies. And, oh, wow, that was a really bad idea, that thing that we did for hundreds of years. Let's not do that anymore. So whether it's people in any religious context or a bunch of atheists, it's all of us just trying to figure out how to get to a higher moral place of existence together.
Meaning we all value well-being. And so we're trying to figure out how to organize our behavior and organize our societal structures in such a way that maximizes our individual and collective well-being. And we have been doing that imperfectly since the beginning of time, but we're getting better and more sophisticated over time. But it's a challenging project, but we are getting better at it. And the goal is to reach higher and higher levels of individual and collective well-being.
Right. And I think this ties into what we were talking about earlier, that if you could somehow prove that there is no God, societies would not all instantly collapse into anarchy and chaos.
We're all still concerned about well-being, regardless of whether or not there's a God.
Right.
You don't need God to explain why we value our own well-being.
Right.
We just do.
So, yeah. So I think the argument that Christianity has a monopoly on objective morality is a bad argument.
Yeah. I think we should be intentionally vague on this point, and hopefully it will enrage somebody who will want to come on and argue about it. We could do a whole episode on that.
Which we tried to do on our own and failed miserably and did not release.
Because we agree. We need conflict. Otherwise, there's nothing to explore and no sparks.
All right. Anything else to talk about, or is that it?
Well, I would be interested to know and to react to any potential criticisms that you may have of me. In particular, do you feel like I'm being too dismissive? Like I've overvalued, I assign too much primacy to the intellect generally.
Yes, I agree with that.
And I disregard spiritual experiences too much, too harshly. I'm too closed off to something. So what exactly is your criticism? I feel like that's kind of like your primary criticism of me when it comes to this in particular.
Yeah, I think so. I think that you have a tendency to worship at the altar of the intellect. Now, it makes sense that you would do that because of your personality bent. You live more in the intellect. Just like I have a tendency to worship at the altar of rightness and doing the right thing and whatever that is. I think that you could be more open to the idea that just because you don't experience something in a certain way, that doesn't mean that it's not true or that there's not truth to be gained there that maybe you're not tapped into. Just like somebody who maybe they're a fundamentalist evangelical and they feel this deep connection to Jesus, and every day they have some experience that just reinforces, see, Jesus helped me find my car in the parking lot, so I know that he died on the cross for my sins. And they would dismiss all of your fancy book learning and your philosophical talking and all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Not seeing, well, you know, there's lots of valuable things that can be gleaned from the intellect and from those sources. I think that you are pretty dismissive of maybe the spiritual experiences especially, because I think you're just not, you don't seem to be wired in such a way that that's something that you are tuned into or capable of experiencing because for whatever reason. But I don't think that that's bad. It's not like, well, you need to try harder to experience Jesus more. Everybody's wired in a different way. But I do think that you put too much primacy on the intellect and are not open to other modes of experience. You dismiss personal experiences as being people claiming that they have access to some type of information that the rest of us aren't capable of. And I think that that's actually true, that there are levels of understanding. That doesn't mean they're actually tapping into Yahweh. Maybe they're just tapping into a spiritual sense or that part of their being is more activated or something. I think there can be truth to that. I think your problem, though, is that people have a tendency to tie those things. Maybe they are more tied into some sort of spiritual experience, and then they associate it with specific truth claims about a specific deity. So I understand you pushing back against those things, but I think you could be more open to other people's experiences. I think you're a data junkie. I get your tennis analogy that you're standing in the middle and you're waiting for the ball, you're waiting for more information, and when you get the more information, you'll pivot or do something. But I kind of feel like no amount of data or information will ever be enough for you.
When it comes to this specifically?
I guess this is sort of the topic that this whole thing's about. So I'd say so. Would you say that you're do you tend to be indecisive in life in general, would you say? Or is it more just around this topic that you are specifically immovable? Because
difference between indecisive and immovable.
It might be a distinction without a difference. If you never move, then there is no difference.
But indecisive has a certain connotation, a weakness connotation.
Well, you could be indecisive because you're just trying to gather so much data about the different choices that you end up making no choice.
I don't feel like I'm indecisive when it comes to this topic. I feel like I have done an obscene amount of data gathering and analysis, and I have explored the territory so thoroughly that I feel very confident where I've landed. I'm not I know that there is not a God person. I'm a maybe but probably not person. And I'm very comfortable right there, right? Let me just start talking around what you've said so far, and hopefully something interesting will come out of it.
Well, here, okay, so let me say something else, and then you can sort of react to that. Because I think it's a sort of a picture of what I'm trying to describe. This is actually a story that Ravi Zacharias told in one of his sermons many years ago that I think is applicable. It's a really good story. He was intending it in a Christian apologetic context, but I think it applies here. And I'm going to butcher it, but it'll get the general sense. So there's a dude who thinks that he's dead, and he can't get over that. He just obsesses over the fact all day, every day, that he thinks he's dead. And nothing that anybody says or nothing that he sees or does convinces him that he's not dead, and it's starting to affect his life because he's obsessing over this all the time. So he goes to see psychiatrists and doctors, and no one can help him get past this concept that he's dead. So finally he goes to see this medical team that's trying to help him, and they get to a place where they are trying to convince him that only living people bleed. Only living people bleed. So they're showing him charts and anatomy textbooks and films and demonstrations, and they take him to a cadaver and all this stuff. And they finally get him to a place where he says, okay, yes, I see everything that you're saying, and I agree. Only living people bleed. So as soon as he says that, doctor pulls out a scalpel and slices him on the arm a little bit, and some blood comes out of his arm. And he looks down at his arm, and he looks up at the doctor, and he looks at his arm, and he looks at the doctor, and he says, oh my God, dead people bleed too. And I think that in some sense, that's kind of the vibe that I get from you around this topic, that no amount of information would ever be, it's not really that you're in the neutral position in the center, it's that no amount of information would ever sway you from where you're at. I think there's also something, maybe this is tangentially connected, or maybe it's connected more, but it's related. Because of how much emotion came out of you in the first couple episodes, especially in episode 2, I think it was, when you really got yourself worked up, I don't think that emotion was coming from a purely rational place. It wasn't just, oh, you're really excited about this topic and you love talking about it and defending your position. There was something, you were tapped into some sort of emotional something disconnected from just the purely logical arguments. And I think there's some resistance to the idea that there's something more going on, as evidenced by that emotion that came out of you. Like there's an emotional resistance to it in some way. I don't know exactly what that is or where that comes from, but I don't think it's just a purely logical resistance. Now you may react.
Okay.
To all the things.
Like there was like 3 or 4 different things I feel like I need to react to, and my memory's not that good. So let me, okay. So I guess starting with the Ravi Zacharias thing. Okay. So first of all, I reject the comparison. This is a comparison to a person who has an absurd, irrational insistence.
Well, okay. It's an analogy. I'm not making a literal comparison. It's to convey the essence of somebody who, regardless of what evidence they are presented with,
okay,
it's never enough.
Okay, so here's I kind of agree.
You said that, I think, in that episode where you got really worked up. I mean, you were almost yelling at me, it's not enough. It's not enough. Very emotionally emphatic about that. And I think that that's true. I think that it would never be enough for you.
I don't know if there's a connection there. But so never be enough. Sorry, I just feel like there's a lot of things that, let's focus on this one. We'll just start with this one thing. Okay, so you're saying that you get the sense that there will never be enough information, and so saying basically that that maybe there is more information, but my mind is closed. My mind is actually stubbornly closed to the information that is actually available. But I'm calling that, I'm saying, well, it's not enough. But you're saying, well, there is more, but you're just not even acknowledging it. So, like, there's something in the way of my ability to interact with information that is present, or an unwillingness to acknowledge valid information because for some reason I don't want to. And that is, I don't think that's an accurate representation of what's going on. I think that what's going on is It's like the Five Fingers thing, right? It's like there are these people who my whole life, they told me I don't have five fingers on my right hand. And it's like, listen, motherfuckers, boom, right here, okay? Shut up. Here they are. It's like, so how, okay, how would I categorize it then? I would say the nature of what these people are asking me to believe is so absurd. It's so removed from reality. It's so removed from the means by which a person can justifiably say that they know anything. And all of the arguments that are being put forward to justify that set of beliefs, we're talking about Christianity right now, are they fail so hard. These are very specific supernatural truth claims that you and I both acknowledge. They're too specific and they're too strong. The name of the creator of the universe is Yahweh. Jesus literally died and rose from the dead. And the significance of that event is X. Very specific things that in no sense whatsoever could be verified as being objectively true. And so all of the quote-unquote information that we're talking about right now are attempts to demonstrate those specific things to be true. So I would say, yes, I am closed. Like, I'll play with it if you throw it at me. I'll play with the information, but I can tell you ahead of time that it's not going to satisfy because you're asking me to believe that I don't have five fingers on my right hand. Like, it's on that level of absurdity. And so am I completely closed off to, like, some of the mystery associated with being a human being and existence? No. But when it comes to the specific claims being made by fundamentalist Christians, I am so closed off to incoming information because, I don't know, if I were to like tie you to a chair and for 10 years present you with 100 arguments a day that you don't actually have five fingers on your right hand, like ahead of time, you would say, I don't care what you say to me. You're not going to change my mind. Not willingly. Like you could torture me to the point where I genuinely start thinking that I don't. But you could not reason me into, I don't actually have five fingers on my right hand without some real, clear, tangible data. It's an absurd thing to try to get me to believe. And so the nature of what I'm being asked to do is what makes me come across as so stubborn. It's a ridiculous set of things that you're asking me to believe. That's what you're sensing, I think.
Yeah, but I also think that to take that analogy, I also sense something in you that if we flip the analogy, I feel like you're equally closed off. Like there could be a scenario where somebody ties you to a chair and presents 100 arguments a day for 10 years that you do have five fingers on your right hand. And you're saying, God damn it, I don't have five fingers on my right hand. Because there's a lot of difference between the literal truth claims of evangelical Christianity, Yahweh is the name of the creator, and some sort of a, whatever, let's say my squishy agnostic, oh yeah, maybe there's something more going on, or you know, there's a lot of shades of gray in between those two. And it feels like you keep saying, well, you know, when it's 100% black, that Yahweh is the name of the creator, of course I'm closed off to that. But it seems like you're more or less closed off, like you pay lip service to this idea. Oh, yeah, I'm open to there's some mystical elements of humanity. But there's a lot of gray area in the middle, I think, that you're either not addressing or not.
No, I think I have addressed it. Like, in my mind, I cannot discount the overwhelming amount of accounts of people claiming to experience things that are difficult to explain. And I'm not just disregarding all of that. What I'm doing is I'm lumping it all together into one box and labeling it with a question mark. And I'm not like burning it or throwing it out. I'm just shelving it. I just feel like there's not enough information available to like make heads or tails of it, really, in a concrete way.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is that I don't think there will ever be enough information for you to make heads or tails of it.
So what's the criticism then? Because we seem to agree on that.
The box with the question mark on it, you're talking about the whole gamut of spiritual experience, or it's specifically the Yahweh's the creator of the universe?
The whole gamut of spiritual experience. It's like, yes, people seem to be having them. Some of them, like apples and pooping, like that example, that's a silly one. But there are some that maybe aren't so silly. And I go, okay, what do I do with that? And I think that the only intellectually honest approach is to acknowledge it and to say, that's interesting. I don't know what to do with that. I'm going to put it in the box, and I'm going to put that box on the shelf, and I'm going to label it with a question mark because I don't fucking know. Well, what's wrong with that approach?
Yeah, I don't know if there's anything necessarily wrong with the approach. I mean, you do you, man. I mean, whatever worked for you in your life. But it just feels like, I guess I'm just making the observation that I think that no amount of data will ever be enough. You're saying there's not enough data, there's not enough information, as if like, okay, just bring it to me. If every piece of data conceivable to you, if every atom in the universe of data was brought to you, it would never be enough. You would never be satisfied.
Satisfied with regard to using that data to come to a hard, specific set of truth claims regarding the nature of those spiritual experiences. And
when you describe it that way, that makes it sound like, well, specific in the sense of the way the Christians...
Like fundamentalist Christians, yeah.
Right, yeah. I don't think you have to come to a place of being a fundamentalist, evangelical, fill-in-the-blank about anything.
So it's like, what possible data could be presented to me to demonstrate to me that there is, like, utility in whatever's going on, or like could demonstrate to me that there's like a place for it in my life?
It feels like the way you're describing it, maybe it seems like you're thinking of it more in a binary way. Like once there is enough data, then the binary switches from 0 to 1, and now the switch is on and it's all true. Whereas I'm saying
just a general openness.
Right, yeah, or to where you could even be moved to a place of, I guess, where I'm, and I'm not saying you should be moved to a place of where I'm at. That's not what I'm arguing. I'm just saying, what would it take to get you to a place where it's like, yeah, I think there's more going on. I don't have a name for it. I don't know what it is, but there's definitely something more than just whatever. What I'm saying is that I don't know that there would ever be enough data that would satisfy. I think that there's some level of the reverse of the it's like an antithetical bias rather than a confirmation
but
bias.
But don't use that analogy, because the individual in that analogy is being an idiot. Like I'm not trying to make anything analogous to a claim that I do not in fact have five fingers on my right hand. What is it that I'm doing? I recognize that there's an overwhelming number of people who seem to be convinced and have experiences to back up their conviction that there is some spiritual aspect to reality that they have the ability to sort of sense and interact with to some degree, to varying degrees. I acknowledge that. I don't dismiss that out of hand. I see that and I go, one, okay, that's interesting and I will not disregard that. And I recognize that a lot of people are having this experience, and so I'm just going to – they all seem to me to be able to be filed into the same box, right, that I label with the question mark. One, it's not a thing that I can relate to, so that I think that's probably some function of my personality, for better or worse. Two, what practical utility would it provide me to what? Take it more seriously, attempt to incorporate it into my life.
I'm not saying it does have any practical utility. I'm just saying it seems like you might be closed off to it.
I do. I know. I acknowledge it. So, okay, maybe this would be helpful. Like, okay, so I just got an ongoing problem in my marriage, for example, is the fact that I don't do emotion very well. And so sometimes you have a significant other who experiences emotions in a more intense way, or maybe even like a more normal way than I do, right? So, or you do, or whatever. And they're not just going to break down fundamentally what the issue is and just present it in a logical, sequential manner for you to interact with very nice and cleanly. It just comes out in a blast of emotion that I don't know how to interpret or handle, and I don't do it, and I don't handle it to my wife's satisfaction because I don't know how to navigate those waters. I can't relate, and I'm just like, why can't you just say the things? Like, obviously, there's a couple of things at the bottom of this, so can you just give me those, and then we can just interact with that? But no, it has to be expressed in the form of all of this, like, shit that does not compute. Like, I don't, and my attempts to sort of coldly navigate and break down and try to navigate down to the essential and just interact with that is infuriating to somebody who doesn't want to play that game. They want to do the emotion thing. And it's like, I don't do that. I don't have that I'm lacking that wiring or whatever. And that comes with its benefits. It allows me to see through things and get to the bottom of things and be cold and rational and objective and emotionally separated so that I can be objective. It's like it gives me a higher vantage point in a lot of the times when people get tangled up in the emotion. But at the same time, it makes interpersonal relationships difficult for me. And maybe it makes what we're talking about right now, it's like I don't know what that feels like. I have never, I observe it from the outside, other people in their little kumbaya circle doing, I don't mean to be dismissive, but other people doing their spirituality thing, and I cannot relate to it. You know, it's like,
I think you should do DMT and then we'd see what happens. That would be really interesting.
Yeah. I, one of these days I will, one of these days I'll get off of Lexapro and I'll give psychedelics a try. It's on my bucket list and I cannot wait until I get to do that. I have a feeling though, that it's going to be my interpretation of what happens is likely to be very different than like what somebody, you know,
sure.
Like,
yeah. That's not to say you should do it because then you'll see the truth, but I think it would be interesting because that's probably because of your disposition to not be inclined towards that kind of emotional connection or spiritual experiences.
Well, I have a feeling
if anything was going to do it, something like that would be the thing to make that breakthrough for you.
Yeah. Although, you know, like you said, I'm kind of I'm a data hound, or
you are a data junkie.
Data junkie, yes. And so I've done an obscene amount of research on psychedelics, and I get what's actually happening physically when you take the psychedelic to some degree. And it's like,
but I think the thing that happens though is that all that goes out the window and the psychedelic takes over. You get on the psychedelic train and you go for the ride where it wants to take you. I just want to clarify, I'm not saying you should do that because then you'll see the truth. I think it would be an interesting sociological experiment to see what would happen. You know, it's like if you go, you do the DMT trip and you go to meet the, what does Terrence McKenna call them?
The sky elves or something elves.
And you were like, give me more data elves. And you come back down.
And, Joe Rogan calls them the geometric patterns made of love and understanding. Right. Yeah, I would love to do DMT, and I will one of these days. I just don't want to kill myself with serotonin syndrome.
Right.
So, yeah, okay, so Andy is too, I'm lacking the emotional component, which is what makes me an INTP, and it's what makes me an Enneagram 5, which has its practical utility, just like every other kind of temperament and every other kind of disposition. It has its positives and negatives, and one of the negatives is that I don't really get to experience that side of life, right? I don't. You know, I'm one of these people who's like in the worship service as a kid and like everybody's like raising their hands and some people are crying and singing and I just cannot in even the slightest degree relate to whatever the hell it is that's going on with these other people around me. And I have, ever since I have memory, had that experience of I see that all these other people are acting this way and I cannot understand why And it's, yeah, like I have this disconnect, this emotional disconnect. I can't.
And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's not to say, well, to be a whole human, you have to experience things the way that other people experience.
No, natural selection made sure that Enneagram Type 5 stuck around and we have our uses. It's nice to have an out-of-the-box thinker around, you know.
I guess what I'm saying is that I think that maybe what I'm saying you're closed off to when you say that people have, I'm not saying you're intentionally trying to straw man, but I think that if you, let's back it down a few levels from the people who say Yahweh is the creator of the universe and he has these specific rules and Jesus died on the cross for your sins and he rose 3 days later. And if you don't pray the prayer exactly this way, you're going to go to hell. You know, let's come down a few steps from that level of belief, just like how you are closed off and don't understand that, you know, people raising their hands in the worship and experiences and all that stuff, that there are people who are not closed off to that. And that, I guess, for you personally, yes, they do have access to information that you don't seem to have access to. And that informs them in some, I guess rational isn't the word, because if we want to reserve the word rational specifically for the intellect.
Could we say they are capable of a certain range of experience, but that the problem comes when they start to assign very specific interpretations, strong interpretations,
yeah,
maybe, as to what's going on.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it is, I would say...
People take it too far.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. Everybody on every side does that. I agree with that. I think, though, that it is fair to say that those people are tapping into, there is a level of truth, and that's kind of a squishy word, but there is truth to be understood through what they are connected to, that maybe because you're not connected to, it feels like maybe you're saying, no, none of that's true. And I'm saying, no, there is levels of truth.
Yeah, that's not what I'm saying.
Okay.
I don't think that's what I'm saying. I will say, though, that I have a tendency to want to assign some naturalistic explanations to it. In particular, I want to say it's like if you take people who actually have whatever it means to be more emotional and to have to express oneself and experience life and interpret life in a more emotional manner. And obviously some people do that to an extreme degree and some people do it to a very minimal degree like me and then everything in between. But say you mix, we're all going around perceiving reality and emotion colors perception. So say you mix in emotion and archetypal content. I don't know this, I'm speculating, but I feel like I have an inkling, like some connection between archetypal content and emotion and spirituality. I know that's really vague. I just feel like there's some connection there. Like,
yeah, they sort of naturally go together.
I mean, there's a reason why we're so profoundly drawn to stories that have in them very well, skillfully integrated archetypal content.
It transcends the intellect. It goes.
There's a reason why Harry Potter exploded as soon as it hit the scene, because J.K. Rowling nailed the archetypes. You encounter certain narratives that do such a good job of that, and it just like grips you on this primal level, and you can't really explain it. And people want to assign a sort of spiritual significance to that, which I totally understand, because that happens to me. Like when I remember, like in high school or elementary school, whenever it was that Harry Potter came out, I remember the feeling, like, and I'm sure everybody has had this experience where it's like, I don't want to eat, I don't want to sleep, I just want to read this fucking book. And I lock myself in my room and just, that's all I did until I was done with the whole freaking thing. And it's like, what is that? Why do some things do that to us and some things don't? And what is that feeling that you feel when that's happening, when you're interacting with that very well articulated archetypal content and it just grabs you on this primal, deep, deep level? It's such an interesting feeling.
So you do have feelings.
Yeah, I do. I do. But it's like, I think that there's some connection there. And it's associated with like...
You're saying there's some connection that people make this connection to justify specific truth claims?
I'm just saying in a very nebulous, vague way that there is a connection between the feeling of a spiritual or like the spiritual experience and an experience that on some level involves an interaction with archetypal content with, I don't know, I see it, human beings and their psyches as like little seeds. It's like the mustard seed or whatever, where like this gigantic, amazing tree comes out of it, which means inside the seed, there's like a pattern. And then you feed resources into the seed, and then it grows into its potential. That process of feeding and emerging is associated with certain feelings and sensations. And it's like we're designed to follow a certain, we're designed to develop and to reach potential. And when we tell ourselves these archetypal stories over and over again, we're representing in narrative form that pattern that's in all of it. It's like a basic software program. I don't know. And then and you feed it through like through experience and relationship and struggle and just experiencing life. And it's like when you encounter these stories, are good representation, are narrative representations of that embedded pattern. It arouses these emotions that are very primal and significant and like, I don't know. And I just think that there's some connection between that experience and what people call spirituality. To bring it back around, yes, I acknowledge that people are having spiritual experiences. I tend to look at it in a different way. And by the way, if you want to, again, Jordan Peterson's Biblical Lecture Series, I think he takes a lot of unjustified liberties in the way that he interprets things. But in particular in his podcast, you get a good secondhand introduction to Carl Jung. This is my favorite thing about Jordan Peterson, aside from the fact that he's a wonderful clinical psychologist who helped me through some hard times. It's kind of like you've got the King James Version and whatever came before that, and then now you've got like the NIV or the NRSV. It's like the NIV version of Carl Jung. If Carl Jung is like the old manuscript that's really hard, you got to learn Hebrew to read the thing. JP like interprets it for you, like breaks it down, makes it more digestible, more. So all of these ideas that I'm expressing are coming from Carl Jung via Jordan Peterson, basically. So yeah, I tend to kind of look at spirituality through a Jungian lens, more or less. So I take a different approach. I don't think I'm as dismissive of it as you're implying. I think I just do treat it differently. Putting a period at the end of that bit and then moving on to the thing about me being emotional in episode 2. I talked a little bit about this in the Justin Grimm episode about how there are a lot of aspects of my past when it comes to my mental health, when it comes to my upbringing and the wasted time and the wasted potential that I can never get that time back. That bugs me, and that there's anger and disappointment and all kinds of negative hot and cold emotions associated with all those memories and whatever. But also, like, there is this thing about, I don't know, being a, I'm an Enneagram type 5 again, and it's like, you want me to believe these things. And it's so absurd. And these motherfuckers, they told me this my whole life, and they suckered me. And it's like, God damn it. Like, I should have figured this out sooner. You wasted so much of my time, and I just wish I had like a couple IQ points higher, and I would have noticed this sooner. I got a freaking bachelor's degree in this bullshit, okay? I wasted so much time and so many resources on this idiotic ideology. And it's infuriating that I've said it before, like I have this like intellectual shame that I was duped for so long. So I don't know. I don't feel like it's what's wrong with feeling all that? Like I don't know.
I don't think there's anything wrong with
it. I don't think that it gets in the way of my ability to do an objective and fair analysis. I don't feel like I'm being overly demanding on my data requirements, given what they're asking me to believe.
Cores of Five would say such a thing.
Okay. Okay. So that's enough said about that, I think. So.
All right. Well, hopefully our next guest will be COVID-free in the near future. And it should be an interesting conversation.
Yeah.
Although we do need to find a good atheist to get on, which we're working on.
Yeah.
But I think we need somebody from that perspective. Maybe you two can tag team and gang up on me. Attack my squishiness.
Yeah, maybe. I feel like we don't know very many of those people. Our whole circle of acquaintance are Christians. So, but it sounds like we might have like one maybe potential. But yeah, it's been a few at this point, two or three maybe, like closeted non-believers that have contacted us and been like, hey, we really appreciate what you're doing. Because apparently we're not the only ones who only know Christians,
right,
you know?
Yeah.
So, but if that describes you and you're out there, come on and let's talk about it. It would be really interesting and useful because we've got like nothing but Christians lined up. So, so if you're out there and you're a non-believer of any sort and you would like to come on and bitch and moan or just shoot the shit or whatever, or maybe we can attack TJ or whatever, give us a holler. Send us a message on Facebook or whatever.
All right. I hope that ending was happy enough for you.
Sure. All right. Cool.